that holds the guardian ring. Spin it loose, a wearing thin, a wearing thin, the biting through, the shifting power leans to you. And the cord is on a wheel.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for Wednesday morning call-in talk radio here on Cable Community Radio, where the time is 22 minutes before 8 o'clock, and the number to call to join in the conversation this morning will be 503-231-8187, but we've got another number to give out right now, which is even more important. And if you want to join in the conversation this morning, when we have guest Ted Nace, the author of Gangs of America, on. He's going to be on in about 7 minutes. First, you need to call 503-232-8818 and join KABU, become a member of KABU. This is the first day of our pledge drive, and we are trying to raise, I do believe it's about $160,000. Just lost. Okay, here we go. Okay. It's a little strange here, I have to say. We really need your money because I can barely hear myself in the headphones, so it's really important that you call 503-232-8818 and become a member. So we're going to go out to Pledge Central right now and have a word with Ani and Bill, I think, are out there. Let's see if we can find them. We just finished telling you all the reasons why you need to join KABU and become a member, and I know it's a little to come back and do this.
Good morning.
Again. Good morning, Bill.
Hi.
So we are going to do another pledge pitch because we have a great guest coming up in about 5 minutes, and we don't want to start out our interview with Ted Nace trying to raise money. So
no,
we'll do that later on.
We don't want to do that. We want to preview something that with raising money, because it's so worthwhile that we want money, and we want money because we have these kinds of things going on all the time here. 503-232-8818 is the number to call in the local calling area. 1-877-500-5266 is the number to call if you're outside of the 503 area code and you want to contribute to KABU. And 20 Southeast 8th Avenue is the place to come if you'd like to make your pledge and walk away with a free coffee mug designed by Kathy Wirtz. A very nice one, nice and roomy, has all kinds of interesting art on it, and also identifies itself as being from KBOO. That would be us.
Well, Bill, I want to start out by ask the question, why do we have to have a pledge drive? I mean, people tune into KABU every day. It's free. They hear things that they wouldn't hear anywhere else on the dial. You hear things without incessant commercial drumbeats telling you to buy things that you really don't want or that are really bad for the earth. So why are we coming on now and telling people that they need to give us money?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because it ain't free. Now, we do a lot more with a lot less than almost any radio station in the country. We have volunteers as our staff. You are a volunteer. Aaron, our engineer, is a volunteer. I am a volunteer. Ani is both a volunteer and a paid staff member.
How does it all work? Well, and you know what I wanted to add to that is we need to do this because this is what allows us to be independent. It is because our base of support is so broad amongst the grassroots that we are able to continue our fierce, independent media presence that I really value about KABU. We're not beholden to any couple of large grantors that we want to make sure we stay on the right side of. We are beholden to, well, about 6,200 of you listeners who are now, in fact, members. And we want to keep that number growing and keep the support of KABU growing. Call now 503-232-8818, 503-232-8818, or toll-free 1-877-500-5266. And help KABU continue our presence on the radio dial.
And we don't generally get on the right side of anything. We more tend toward the left side of things. But, you know, that just happens because we are independent and so different from most of what you hear on radio or hear and see on television, who are beholden to corporate interests, and that tends to push things in a particular direction. And there's nobody pushing us. We can say and do whatever our volunteers and staff agree is cool, which is a whole lot of stuff. News, public affairs, music with a diversity that you will not find on any other radio station. And once again, all you have to do is give us a little hand and answer Barbara's question by calling 503-232-8818. Someone will pick up the phone and help you become a member or extend your membership in 2 minutes or less. Or if you happen to be out of town, there are actually two options. One, we haven't mentioned yet this morning, is www.kboo.fm. You may be listening to us on the web. And there's a special place on the web where you can click and become a member. And if you want to talk to an actual human being, and that would be the folks waiting to answer your phone call, you can call 1-877-500-5266. These are the ways that you can help us directly, get a hold of us to help us. You can contribute, say, $5 a month, and that comes out to $60 a year, which can be difficult for lots of folks. That's $60 all at once. $5 a month is a lot more doable.
We have Ted on the phone. He's waiting to come on, and I'd really like to hear some phones ring before we start this interview, which I'm really looking forward to. Ted Nace was on a couple of years ago during a pledge drive, and it was a really exciting conversation about the rise of corporate power in the United States, something that a lot of you listeners are interested in. And if you want to fight the corporate monster, particularly the corporate monster of media monopoly, I mean, we are one of the few... Don Quixote's out there, you know, struggling, tilting at windmills against the corporate monster. So you need to give a call right now at 503-232-8818. I'd really like to get to the interview with Ted, but we need to have some phones ring so we can continue to afford to do this kind of programming.
Okay, so let's get quixotic, folks. 503-232-8818. 1-877-500-5266. Unlike, the great Don, these are real. These windmills are not merely windmills. They are corporate media ownership. They are people and organizations that maintain a bland face to keep a bland, uninformed public buying. But here at KBOO, we open it all up for you. So give us a call and contribute and keep independent community radio going.
That's right. Our motivation here, our volunteers come in every day to really inform and inspire people to have empowerment in their own lives, to take action, to make change possible. That's what our volunteers do when they come into KBOO. You need to be a part of that effort. Call us now with your generous support, 503-232-8818, 503-232-8818, or 1-877-500-5266. We are looking to raise $1,200 for Barbara's program this morning. We know we can do that with your help right now.
And just so, let's start us off so that we can get to the interview, so that Barbara doesn't start off that interview feeling mopey and unhappy because no one has called in. And it's so easy. Remember that if you are of the financially challenged variety of people, a $20 pledge will get you a membership. $40 is our regular amount, and then, you know, well, you got it, we'll take it. 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266. We want to hear a phone ring, we want to get a pledge. You can do it. Remember, you can be the first on your block who has pledged for this pledge break. You can come in to 20 Southeast 8th, pick up a coffee mug. Not only will you have pledged, but you will be able to see it. Let's get to Barbara anyway,
okay.
But give us a call.
Thanks, Bill and Ani, and we are going to continue on with our regularly scheduled or maybe specially scheduled programming now, and we'll be back to talk with Ani and Bill in a little while and have some help with Ted Nace as well to raise some money, because it's really important we raise $1,200, a minimum of $1,200 before 9 o'clock today, and keep this kind of programming going. So good morning, Ted.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Pretty good. So Ted was on our show, it was about 2.5 years ago when your book Gangs of America first came out.
That's right, right.
And we have now a revised paperback edition with an added chapter called So What's the Alternative? So I guess we'll talk particularly about what's the alternative today, since we haven't talked about that yet. But I wanted to start out because I was reading the Oregonian this morning before I came down here, and there were two articles that popped out at me, and one was an article about how PGE Enron, our Enron-owned public electrical utility here in Portland, is turns out that they're continuing to send money that are supposedly money has been raised to pay U.S. and state taxes. They continue to send it to Enron, who then doesn't pay taxes because they're bankrupt, and so they can use their losses to offset any of their tax liabilities. And this has been a big issue here for quite a while. And so there's an article in the Oregonian about how they just sent another several million, hundreds of millions of dollars. Actually, I think they're expected to be paying another $150 million before a new law goes into effect, which will preclude them from being able to do that. And then in April, they're going public. So another part of this issue is that the city of Portland's been trying to buy this utility and or take it over in some way, and PGE has been standing very strong as in opposing, you know, any kind of government interference. And these are all things I was thinking about when I was reading the last chapter of your book yesterday. So I'm not sure how much you're following this whole Enron-PGE debacle here in Portland, but it does seem to be a good model of what you talk about when you describe how corporations are beyond government control because of the ways that laws have been reinterpreted over the past almost 100 years. So I'm wondering, have you been following at all this PGE story?
You know, I have not been following it, but it doesn't particularly surprise me. You know, and we talk a lot about framing things and how issues are put together. And it's interesting that PG&E would be talking about government interference, because I mean, as far as I'm concerned, and I think as far as most people are concerned, PG&E is the government. You know, they're part of the government. We have no, I mean, here in California, we don't have any other.
By the way, this is PGE, not PG&D. This is our own.
Oh, you're talking about Portland,
Portland General Electric. It's Portland General Electric.
Oh, Portland General Electric.
Which was taken over by Enron about 9 years ago.
Okay, so they're continuing to collect money, even though they're in bankruptcy.
Well, PGE is not in bank. It's a very weird thing, and this is, I don't know, you probably know more about corporations than I do, so you maybe will understand how this works, but they became a wholly owned subsidiary of Enron in 1997, but they have maintained a certain amount of corporate identity. They are the only part of Enron that's still making money, so they are a very profitable arm of Enron. So they're making, the only money that Enron's making at this point, and so then they have to collect taxes from the ratepayers, which are supposed to go to pay the IRS and Oregon state taxes, but instead the money goes to the corporate headquarters in Houston of Enron, because it's still a subsidiary of Enron, and then Enron uses that tax money. They use their losses in all the rest of their operations to offset their tax liability, so then the money that we are paying out here in Oregon, supposedly for taxes, goes to pay off Enron's creditors.
Well, that's a good one.
I don't think you should have that in your book in the next edition.
Yeah, you know, I find myself getting lost in all the details, you know, and I think most people do, but somehow it doesn't seem like most people do miss basically following the, you know, the basic thread of the story here. And I wanted to talk about a poll that came out in December, where they were asking both Republicans and Democrats just what they thought about the power of different groups in society, and it was very striking because nobody really seems to be buying the line. Even Republicans, they basically asked the question, do you think, you know, this group, that group has too much power? And when they asked about big companies, 90% of people said that big companies have too much power. 5% thought big companies had too little power. But when they asked Democrats by 96% thought big companies had too much power. When they asked Republicans, 86% of Republicans thought big companies had too much power. So it's not real controversial. you know, and the funny thing about it is, you know, that's not controversial, and yet somehow there's sort of a gap. It's like the American people are not enamored of big business, but when it comes down to actually, you know, assuming that we're a democracy, when we have something that we all agree on, then the next step is to fix it. Just for example, when they were having the hearings for Justice Roberts and Justice Alito, the confirmation hearings, there wasn't a single question about what that nominee thought about what could be done, you know, from a judicial standpoint about a big corporate power. And yet all the American people want something to be done. And, you know, just listening as I was waiting for the interview, listening for the, listening to the pitch for money, this isn't an abstract issue. This really comes down to how much money do you have at the end of the month, you know, for things like, to support your local radio station. And I mean, you know, I have to manage the books for a family, and I think everybody else does. It's ridiculous. The numbers, just the specific numbers about where the money is in this country are really unbelievable. There's about $45 trillion in wealth in the United States. And, you know, if you get your calculators out and you divide that by 75 million families, every family in America, there's $600,000 of wealth for every family in America. And it won't be very many years now, probably in the next 6-7 years, you know, judging by the rate of growth of the wealth of the United States, when we will be a nation of millionaires. Every single family in America will be millionaires on average. Now, and they'll, you know, that will be a fact that will be in the newspaper. We're a country of millionaires. Well, of course, it's ironic because we're not a country of millionaires. It's like that old joke, when Bill Gates walks into a bar, everybody becomes a billionaire on average.
Right. I was actually in a workshop last week. I was learning all about statistics and the way you use different kinds of averages. And if you use a median, you know, half the people are like, you know, you divide it, we're... In terms of numbers, so half the people are wealthier or half the people are poorer than this average number. And that's, actually, when Bill Gates goes in the room, he kind of takes the, he skews the numbers anyway, unless you do it in terms of the number of people. If you do it by which group of people which is the largest group of people with a certain amount of money, at that point, we're not all millionaires. And that's really the way we have to look at what's going on here.
And Ralph Nader used to say that the gap between what's possible and what is the job that we have cut out for us. You know, we have the wherewithal in this country to make every family have $600,000, and we also have the amount of income as a country, on a yearly basis for every family to have an income of $150,000. That income is being, you know, paid out in this country. It's just being paid out so extremely, such an extremely skewed way. And it's getting worse, is the thing. Since the early 70s, since 1972, or I'm sorry, since 1973, the average real income for the bottom 90% has gone down by 7%. So people feel they're worse off. And that's why you get these numbers, you know, people saying, oh, you know, big companies have too much power. At the same time, they say small business, 92% feel small business has too little power, 4% think small business has too much power. So this isn't just, you know, the workers versus the big companies. This is the workers and the little companies all against the big companies. And you know, when you have sort of that kind of unanimity in a country that calls itself democratic, and yet nothing's happening and things are still going backwards, and you have to ask, well, what exactly is going on? What are the things that are preventing, you know, democracy from working? You know, if you were the heart specialist, where is the hardening of the arteries? Where is it not coming through? Because, you know, we still have the right to vote. We have the right to say anything we want.
Sort of.
You know, as long as you don't talk about, you know, certain things. How exactly is that not working? And I think that's the piece that people are filling in, you know, between knowing that there's this imbalance of power and then actually feeling like something could be done about it, that's sort of the job in front of us.
Well, I remember, and I might have it wrong, but I think I noticed a statistic in your book yesterday where 99% of the wealth is held by 1%, and that the remaining 1% of the people shares that other 1% of the wealth. Is it quite as extreme as that? Because I remember in the old days, back in the early 70s, it was more like 70-odd percent of the wealth was held by 30% of the people. And I know that number of people who hold the majority of the wealth in the country keeps shrinking, and the amount of wealth they hold keeps increasing.
Right. It's 1% of the country owns almost as much money as the other 99%, and they have about 45% of the wealth. It's getting worse fast. So then if you add up with the next 2% and the next percentage, all of those together, and we're talking about some pretty wealthy people when you're talking about being 1 or 2% from the top, and yet that little sliver at the top, even that 1/100th of 1%, has been has such a large share and is going up so fast. The top 1/100th of 1% since the early 70s has gone up by about 600%, sixfold. And that's why every time you open up the yearly issue of Fortune magazine, where they list the number of billionaires, the number of billionaires is increasing, and it looks like the country's getting a lot richer. And the country is getting a lot richer. It's just not getting down to anybody else. So that's where it hits people in the I don't understand how people are making it, frankly. People are not making it. People are not able to pay their bills. I mean, I'm not talking about extravagant lifestyles. People can't make it in this country right now. So what do? They pass bankruptcy, what they call bankruptcy reform, which means you can never get out from under it. They pass tort reform, which means if you're involved in one of these real ugly situations where you're injured or something, they put caps on the amount that you can be compensated for. Oh, basically trying to increase the profits of companies that make defective products at the expense of people who've been injured by those. So there all of these things that have been happening in the last 30 years or so, cumulatively, what they amount to is this standard of living for most people in America is going down, and they don't like it.
Well, I'm talking with Ted Nacy. He's the author of Gangs of America, which has recently been released in paperback with a new chapter at the end, which is to give us some hope. This is a pretty intense book about looking at the rise of corporate power and the disabling of democracy in this country, something we talk about a lot on KBOO, but I will say that this book spells it out in ways that have made it a lot clearer for me. And you can get a copy of this book if you call 503-232-8818 right now and pledge to support KBOO. And there's more information. We can provide more information when we actually do our full-blown pledge pitch in about another 10 minutes. But I need to let you know that you are listening to KBOL Portland, listener-sponsored community radio at 90.7 in the Portland metro area, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge, and 100.7 in the Mid-Willamette Valley. It's just about 8 o'clock. And again, I'm talking with Ted Nace, author of Gangs of America. And you want to join in the conversation with Ted, you can give a call at 503-231-8187. Well, what do you think has made it? We talk about how the wide majority of Americans understand that corporations have too much power and that they should have less power, but why is it that this is not being heard from? Why are the corporations continuing to do what they want, as in the case of Portland General Electric, which continues to send our tax money to Enron, and so Enron can pay off its creditors?
Right. The breaking down how exactly it works, that's one piece of it, and then I want to make sure that we talk about, what's the alternative, because that's the last chapter of the paperback that came out. And that's the question I got so often as I traveled around talking about the book, and people would say, "Boy, you're really depressing me." But what can be done about it? And so that's a big story too. And just to sort of summarize, I think that when the scandals were happening in 2002, 2003, there was this sort of moment in American society where people said, "Geez, I hate those big companies, hate those big executives." But there was this tendency to focus on, individuals and not really think about the problem as a problem of democracy not working. Just to make a quick list of 8 or 10 sort of arterial sclerotic blockages of democracy, one of them is just the basic design of the American system itself. And this has to be recognized. I mean, we all have to I think we all have to look at our own history going all the way back to, you know, the Constitutional Convention itself, not just blaming George Bush for these problems. But we have a system that's a little different than an ideal democracy in the sense that it was specifically built to protect property against democracy. And what you see, you know, this is the...
Explain that. What do you mean by that?
You know, they talk about checks and balances. Well, let's take this thing. If 90% of the American people think big business has too much power, well, that should lead to some legislation to try to correct the imbalance. But, you know, one of the checks is that, you know, a law can be vetoed. And the veto means the executive can veto the will of the majority. Well, we have right now we have an executive who was put in office originally by a minority of the American people. So that's one little little twist on democracy. Another thing that's got a lot of attention in my book is that even if legislation is passed by a majority of the people and signed by the executive, you have a situation where. Of course, the courts can declare it unconstitutional. And what's happened since the late 1800s is this whole body of judicial doctrine has grown up, which establishes a whole series of corporate rights, basically that corporations have constitutional rights on par with or exceeding those of ordinary citizens. And, you know, just as a practical example, utility companies, it's becoming impossible to pass legislation that keeps them from giving money into state referendum campaigns. So let's say you get the populace aroused and you pass a law that says we don't want utility money going into initiative campaigns so that we can fix things. This happened in Montana in the late 90s. They passed Initiative 125 to keep corporate money out of the referendum process. Well, the federal court said that's a violation of the free speech rights of utility companies, mining companies, and so everybody went scrambling to look in their constitution, and they didn't see anything about protecting the free speech rights of corporations. That had been a judicial construction, and actually it wasn't even a judicial construction until the late 1970s. So that's another way that our basic system isn't terrifically democratic.
As an aside, I mean, it's sort of disturbing to see that a lot of the Supreme Court justices who have helped the system to... morph into what you're describing were some of the most liberal, progressive, wonderful Supreme Court justices like Thurgood Marshall and Byron White. I mean, it was I found that a little disconcerting that, in fact, it was Rehnquist who had a dissent in one of the opinions that gave corporations more like personhood power.
That's right. Even Rehnquist couldn't stomach some of this stuff.
But you wonder why would how could Thurgood Marshall stomach this stuff and Rehnquist couldn't? That's what I'm wondering. Like, what's that about?
Well, sometimes sometimes you have to look sort of like at the chess game of the courts, and sometimes some of the liberal justices will actually vote in ways that expand corporate rights, thinking that that sets up a greater ability to expand rights for ordinary citizens. And it has to do with, sort of the ongoing chess game at the court. But the net effect, of basically saying that corporations have rights on par with human beings is to make certain kinds of legislation to fix things impossible. I mean, another one that's become very popular, as the federal government has become very dominated by business interests, a lot of reform has moved to the state level. And states have been passing stricter environmental laws. The Western states have become mobilized against global warming. So the new thing is for the federal Congress to create preemptive legislation. They call it preemption, which means that no state can pass an environmental law that's stronger than what the federal government says. So, you'll hear conservative, ideologues talk about states' rights, but at the same time, the conservative-dominated, legislature is passing laws that keep states from actually exercising their rights.
Yeah, actually, we've got a caller, and we're about to take a pledge pitch. So I want to squeeze our caller in, and let you know that you're talking with Ted Nace, who is the author of Gangs of America. Hello, you're on the air.
Good morning. Could you talk about the effects of inflation and the federal, the Fed's ability to print money whenever they so choose, and also, I know it's not quite as related, but the Electoral College as it relates to those arterial blockages. Thanks. I'll take my
Thanks for calling. Well, actually, let's kind of hold that thought because we're going to go out and start to our pitch supporters here and try to raise some more money. And Ted, you'll stay on the line and help us pitch, right?
Oh, you bet.
Okay, so Ani and Bill, are you there?
Well, I'm here, as usual. Ani is just...
Where is Ani?
Around. I just don't know.
We've
got
to put a leash on her and tie her down.
Exactly. But, well, she'd like it too much. Anyway, 503-232-8818. That's the number here in Portland, 1-877-500-5266. It's the number everywhere else in the country and in Canada. And then KBOO.FM, that's the address on the internet for you to find us, and you can listen streaming on the web, and you can pledge online.
And I want to sweeten the pot right off the bat. I mean, I know we like people to...
We like sweet pots.
We like people to join KBOO because they really like us, and they appreciate the news and the information and the music and the community and the personality and all the things that make us different and make us serve you individually and collectively. But sometimes you just need a premium to get it going. And I'm very excited that we have a whole bunch of copies of Gangs of America, this book by Ted Nace. It's the new updated version that has the final chapter, So What's the Alternative, so you don't walk away just totally depressed after reading this book or just angry. You'll go out and start your own business that's going to overthrow this corporate structure. So anyway, if you want to get a copy of this book, all you have to do is call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. And I'm not exactly sure how much you have to pledge to get the book.
A mere $60, a mere $5 a month.
And you can get this really great book, and I've read this book, and I just read the last chapter last night, and it's definitely a good read and will get you very informed and very fired up. So all you need to do is join KBOO right now and get a copy of Gangs of America by Ted Nace.
Yes, indeed, and that's how it goes. We do have two people answering phone calls, and we have both people on the line, so if nobody picks up the phone, be patient. And
Ani will come and answer it.
And Ani will come in wherever she is. She will find her way back here, and she will help as well. And just as a side note, the court case that created corporate humanity, so to speak, is Santa Clara County versus whomever, I forget.
Ted, help us.
Right, the Southern Pacific Railroad versus Santa Clara. They call it the Santa Clara case.
Right. And so you could go, you could look that up and read it. What's interesting about it is that the actual decision, the opinion, does not do this. The summary note written by the clerk does it. So it's not only that there's no basis in the Constitution, there isn't even a real basis in the in a decision of the Supreme Court.
And
so
you can learn
weird
things like that from reading this book, and you can get this book by calling 503-232-8818 right now and become a member of KBOO. And, I mean, where do we start with why? Every time I turn on the radio and I listen to someplace else on the dial, I'm reminded of why KBOO is so important to me. And even when we're funky and even when we have dead air, which has been happening a little bit lately, there's still there's the authenticity and there's the directness of the contact. We give you the news as we hear it, and we actually have a much better news department than we had actually back in the days when Bill and I were involved with the first KBOO news department in 1972.
Right.
I think our news department has come a long ways. We actually have news services and reporters and actually know how to do journalism now. And you'll hear stuff here on our news shows, on our public affairs shows, on our call-in shows. You won't hear anyplace else on the dial. I mean, we say this every pledge drive. I'm almost tired of saying, I can't believe I'm saying it again. It's a cliche, but it's really true, and it's becoming more and more true because even our friendly commercial competitor, Air America, which a lot of us enjoy listening to, but there is still a very big difference between the freedoms that we have here at KBOO to really express ourselves and what they can do in Air America between the commercial breaks. And then don't get me started about National Public Radio, which is also, you know, watching the kind of corporate domination of the media. It's even happening there in the
Barbara, don't get started.
I won't get started.
Okay, don't get started.
But KBOO is really like the last place here in Portland where you are free from all this kind of corporate infiltration, and you can hear the news that you want to hear. Well, maybe not, you don't want to hear, but hear the news without the filter of people trying to control you and trying to steer you in directions that will keep you away from empowering yourself.
And
that's absolutely true.
They do that.
Indeed, is by calling 503-232-8818. Become a sponsor of this news. Allow your access to independent media, really excellent multi-sourced information. Allow your access to continue by calling 503-232-8818. Support this community resource, and maybe you're outside the Portland dialing area. Call us toll-free at 1-877-500-5266. Do ask for a copy of the book, Gangs of America. With your $60 contribution, we would be happy to send you a copy of this book. You're listening to the interview of Ted right now. Not right now, but...
We'll get back there as soon as...
We'll be back there momentarily. And 503-232-8818, the number to call, or 1-877-500-5266.
I want to give Ted an opportunity in this official pledge pitch break before we go back to the official interview for Ted's thoughts, because Ted's been on KBOO before during pledge drives. And what does community radio mean to you, Ted?
Oh, you know, it's... one of the things I think is so important about things like KBOO is I often talk to people and they say, but, you know, the country is so conservative. And I say, well, why do you think that? And they go, well, every time I turn on the TV, blah, blah, blah. And they go, well, no, wait a minute. You know, I don't come from, you know, the West Coast. I live in San Francisco now, but I grew up in North Dakota. You know, I've been back speaking all around the country, in Missouri and North Dakota. And, you know, if you actually talk to people in, you know, real people anywhere, you find out that the country is not so conservative. And this is borne out by polls. Well, you have to turn on a radio station like KBOO to really find that out. But what happens is when we all listen to this this corporate media and NPR is so saturated with corporate values that you become demoralized and unable to act. You forget, you just aren't aware that there's millions and millions of people similarly inclined to yourself sitting out there also demoralized listening to the same corporate saturated media. And then the question the guy asked a little while ago is sort of a perfect setup for that. He talked about monetary policies and inflation. This is a perfect example of how NPR does it exactly the same as the corporate media. They talk about the stock market went up today. Okay, we should all cheer. Well, what does that really mean? The stock market goes up when the unemployment rate goes up. They never talk about why is that. Well, the unemployment rate goes up. That means that it's going to be easier for corporations to pay, you know, what they call wage pressure is going to be reduced. That means profits are going to be better. There really is a divide in this country between the interests of the ultra wealthy and everybody else. And if the bottom 90%, if their interests aren't being reflected in the media, you know, that may be why they're very demoralized. Everything we're supposed to be doing is cheering for the interests of a very, very small sliver of society, and we're all supposed to buy that. And I really think that the impact of KBOO and stations like that and the alternative media is huge, because it's the one place you can go to affirm the things that you know are true, and that if you talk to people anywhere in America, they know are true. So I think that's something that has to be stressed.
And so the best way to cheerlead for our side is to call 503-232-8818 right now, or 1-877-500-5266. If you're calling from out of town, that will be your toll-free way to make a pledge to KBOO. And Bill and Adi, tell us a little bit more about what happens, how much you have to spend, and what happens when you become a member.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks both Barbara and Ted for the cheerleading and the instruction about what's so important about KBOO. And now here's the how. Now, once you've called us up at 503-232-8818, someone will pick up the phone and ask you your name and how much you want to pledge and how you want to pay for it. And all of these things obviously take very little time. And you can do as little as you want, because it all helps. And in terms of becoming a member, if you are financially challenged, it's $20 a year, and you get our monthly program guide. The regular amount is $40 if you have a reasonable income. And then the minimum amount for a monthly Take it out of your bank account and put it into ours. Pledge is $5 a month or $60 a year, and then as much as you want after that.
We really like the actually $10 a month, what do you call those, our sustaining
members,
where we take it
yes.
out of your bank account once a month, $10, you don't even notice it. And we have to do is like figure out how to automatically get that written into people's check registers. We're working on that part of the technology. But anyway, so every month, along with you know all those other bills that are taken out, your health insurance and KBOO. Your health
exactly.
insurance, $500 a month. KBOO, $10 a month. You're getting a lot more. See, health insurance is only you know useful if you get sick, which you hope it doesn't happen. But KBOO is useful every day of the month for you.
And don't forget,
helps
Barbara,
you not be sick, actually.
That you could do... Health insurance, $500 a month. KBOO, $500 a month.
You could, actually,
I mean,
yeah.
You know,
get so
you
much
got
more.
The bucks, we got the need, and you're really building a community.
And we have to raise $1,200 in the next 45 minutes. I'm not sure how far along we are on that goal, but it's really important that we meet that goal. I'm not going to be here next week, so I actually feel like we should raise $2,400 to try to make up for the fact that
that's right.
Here. So we really got to get going on that. I don't hear the phones ringing.
No, they have been ringing. They're turned down kind of low
okay.
since last time I was here 6 months ago.
Okay.
But they've been ringing a lot, so much that Ani has been answering the phones because there's so much calling and not quite enough people.
Okay, well, actually, I think in that case, because Ted only can be around for about another 12 minutes,
yeah.
so we're
going to
go back and do the interview, and then we'll
Great.
Be back at 8:30, and all we'll do is pitch until 9.
But
we'll
a deal.
Do more than that. Anyway, thanks, Bill and Ani, wherever you are. And so, Ted, it's back to you and me. Actually, I wanted to throw out another thing I read in the paper today just to get your response. I didn't read the whole article. I just saw a headline that said, Colgate has bought Tom's toothpaste. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, I think that organizations like, Tom's and Ben and Jerry's, that have defined themselves sort of as an alternative to the corporate mainstream, they're not isolated, though, from the overall, they're not isolated from the overall system. And it's just the reality that I don't know the exact circumstances of Tom's of Maine selling out, but I know that in the case of Ben and Jerry's, they were actually caught in a system where, the board of directors really didn't have control that once that stock was issued to the general public, they had to take the highest bid that was offered to them. And this kind of leads into what I wanted to talk about just a bit before going out about, alternative ways of looking at the, alternatives to just the system that we have. And, a lot of times this is a conversation that never even gets started in the United States because, the assumption is, and, we're taught it in all of our, in basically all the education we get, formal and otherwise, that, well, you may not like this system, but what's the alternative? You want to be, have one of these sort of Eastern European rigid, stand in a line to get bread, socialist economies. And it's a false dichotomy. And what I did in the new chapter I wrote for the book was talk about what is going on right now in the United States in terms of alternate economics, real situations. And, one of the things that, I'll just throw out a business that people wouldn't expect, the Green Bay Packers. Green Bay Packers is never going to get sold out.
Unlike the Portland Trailblazers, we're trying right now. There's a big fight there because the owner Paul Allen, who's one of the richest men in the world, is going broke. And at one point, there was a threat that the Trailblazers would leave Portland. It was interesting to see how much ire that raised in Portlanders. And so when I was reading in your book that the Green Bay Packers will never be sold, I thought this should be a model for the Trailblazers should sell shares like the Green Bay Packers did.
Right. Well, the Packers are basically the deal with the Packers is that they have a rule, and it's been in place since late 1920s, that no single person, basically that to own the bulk of the company is owned by the community. So it all started back in the Depression when they were having a financial crisis, and they just went to the community and they said, if you want a team, you gotta buy in. And ownership in the Packers is very widely distributed in the local area, but by the charter of the Packers, it has to be that way. And so they can never be sold to one of these owners who wants to move the team. Now the NFL has a situation where they mandate that a single person own at least 50% of each team. So they've made national football into a rich person's game, where, you know, where you own your team, and then, you know, you run into some financial situation. It's hard for me to believe that Paul Allen is in any
Isn't
kind
it
of
funny?
Financial
He's
trouble.
Going broke. I mean, well, that's what he says, and so the Trailblazers is going broke, and it's a lot has to do with the way that he managed it. But when I was reading about how the Green Bay Packers was owned by the community, I thought, well, people are so up in arms about the Blazers possibly leaving Portland, and also very unhappy about the way that the Blazers have been managed for the last few years under Allen. And I wonder if there's a way for the Blazers to sell shares to the community and become the community operated basketball team, kind of like the KBU of basketball.
Well, there's a whole book devoted to this called Going Local by a friend of mine named Michael Schumann, Going Local, and I recommend it to people. It's absolutely an option, and it's often been used. There was a chain of stores in the mountain states, and I believe it was Idaho and maybe Wyoming, that was owned by one of the large chains, and they were going to shut down these stores. So the local community bought them, and they've created their own their own sort of mini network that's much more supported by the community. I guess the point is that we don't have to just do it one way, and that this ought to be on the table. Different ways of owning things. I'm sure that among your listeners are many, many, many small business owners who are doing a fabulous job. They may be formally organized as a corporation. They may be unincorporated. They may be an S corporation. But the fact of the matter is they're different from a very large corporation where there's no local accountability. They're owned within the community, and that makes such a difference.
And I think, actually, I mean, because when we do this corporation bashing, I mean, KBRU, for that matter, is a corporation. We're a nonprofit corporation. But I think we have to distinguish between multinational corporations where there's no local base and a locally owned corporation. I mean, that the corporations, in fact, when they are locally based, locally owned, and serve the community, can be a very forceful kind of structure for community growth.
Well, I mean, just to the size of some of these alternatives. Right now, there's 11,000 what they call ESOPs in the United States, employee stock ownership plans, where the workers are gradually becoming the owner of the company. The combined assets of those ESOPs is $400 billion now. This is getting to be pretty significant.
And actually, I think, I'm not sure if I'm right, but I think that Costco might be one of them.
Well, no, Costco's a straight-up traditional corporation. And a lot of times people talk about Costco as a better alternative to Walmart. And one of the reasons is their basic approach to employees is not to pay at the very, very lowest, but to actually have a certain kind of quality of pay and benefits. And on the other hand, Costco, you know, often does many of the same things, that Walmart does. But yes, there's not the Walmart model is not the only model that's out there. Benjamin Franklin started the first cooperative in the United States that they called the Philadelphia Contributionship for the Insurance of Houses from Loss by Fire. I mean, there's 30 million rural customers of telephone and electric cooperatives. There's 1 million people in housing cooperatives. There's 500,000 children going to cooperative nursery schools and childcare programs. And there's a very vibrant economy that's sort of rising amidst the dysfunction of the big corporate economy.
And also, I think there's a big growth in the credit unions, which I think were, for a while, almost were being targeted after the savings and loans were all destroyed in the 80s. It seemed to be that the same folks were going after the credit unions, but instead it seems like there's a real burgeoning of credit unions. And
well, absolutely, and I think as people, you know, find that some of these models, you know, are vulnerable, like maybe what's going on with Toms of Maine, you know, they look at it again. And one of the lessons that come out of Europe is that some of these employee-owned businesses are capable of competing, you know, toe-to-toe with some of the biggest corporations in the world. They have this complex of companies in Spain called the Mondragon Complex. Their revenues are between $6 and $7 billion, with, you know, $13 billion of assets, 53,000 workers, but they're all cooperatives. They're all run by the workers, and they're some of the largest industrial manufacturers in Europe now. It was all started in 1943 by a priest named Don Jose Maria Arizmendi Arreta. in the town of Mondragon. He had started a technical school for boys, but his principle was he didn't want the whole thing to end up just being another sort of corporate clone. And so he set the ground rules where the workers would continue to own and run these companies. And then as the companies got bigger and bigger, you know, that has stayed in place. Now, they're not without their problems. Anything big has problems, but it's a different kind of problem, because they have the ability to vote for solutions. So they have a democratic kind of economy going on there.
Now, you said something about Tom's. I'm wondering, is there anything at this point, if Tom's, I mean, Tom's is being taken over by Colgate, and what I was reading very quickly was the management, I mean, the owners of Tom are going to stay in place and be running the business for now. I mean, that was, I think that Ben and Jerry, 3 years, Aaron, my engineer, just said. And that's sort of the same model that Ben and Jerry's had. So is there any way to save Tom's of Maine toothpaste, or do we have to look for alternatives now to, you know, find ways to brush our teeth without putting sugar in it?
Well, you know, I don't know about that situation, and, you know, and I would just be speculating. So I'll just leave it at that.
So just one more example, I guess, of corporations winning out, actually, or big corporations swallowing up the smaller idealistic companies.
Can look at it from the other perspective and say, you know, the Tom story shows that people want something different. If the institutional structure doesn't exist that can allow that thing to maintain itself, you know, then there's another thing that needs to be fixed.
Because, I mean, I have another quick story. I mean, we had a locally owned chain of health food stores here in Portland for many, many years called Nature's. And it got bigger and bigger, and they started out with one little store, and then they had stores all over the area. And in order to be competitive and to be able to do what the owner wanted to do in terms of doing this fusion of herbal and homeopathic remedies and natural and vitamins and sort of more allopathic methods as well, he did this partnership with GNC, who kind of came in and I guess took majority ownership of the store. And then things started to fall apart, and before he knew it, he lost control, and GNC had sold out to Whole Foods, to Wild Oats, which is it's a small company that's actually turned into rather a large behemoth organic Safeway sort of thing. And a lot of the workers at the former Nature's were very unhappy with what was going on, and a few of them started a new store called New Seasons, which is locally owned and dedicated to, you know, providing local produce and local goods and being local. And it's kind of an interesting thing of going full circle. And in fact, New Seasons is bankrolled by the guy who originally started Nature's. But it was an example, again, of seeing something that got so big that it had to become sort of taken over by the larger corporate model in order to remain competitive. And in fact, the owner of Nature's sold out to GNC so he could remain competitive with Whole Foods and with Wild Oats, and he lost that gamble.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the lesson that I think progressives should take away from looking at some of these things is there's nothing wrong with a big, there's nothing wrong with corporate, but that there's something very, very wrong when the country cannot any longer truly be described in any sense as democratic. You know, in the Democratic administration of Clinton, you had a government that was very much working for big corporations. You didn't quite have corporations literally running agencies like now, where they will simply put, you know, I have any number of examples of agencies like OSHA or the FDA, where either the number one person or the deputy who's really in charge of policy is just literally an industry lobbyist. So if you go to Washington, it's not a secret that big corporations, you know, Ralph Nader calls it occupied territory. They're running the government. They are the government now. That's taking it a little too far. But to have an economy that has a mixture of small, big, publicly owned, privately owned, where you know, things are truly under the control of the people, that's not a vision that's so outrageously utopian that we can't hope for that. I think that's where that's sad that people feel like, the kind of country we want is just out of reach.
Well, so do you think it's possible with the descriptions you have in your last chapter of alternatives to large corporate structures that we can actually take back our economy and have this kind of mixed economy that retains a democratic vitality?
Yeah, absolutely, because you know, the big corporate model where corporations rule and, you know, in a tenth of a percent or a hundredth of a percent of the people really have everything, you know, that's not sustainable either socially, environmentally, or in any other respect. You know, so it has to change. I mean, you know, where are the pharaohs of Egypt? They're gone. Those kinds of systems are rigid, they fall apart, they don't meet people's needs, and ultimately, people are going to push for what they want. We don't have slavery anymore. It wasn't because people, you know, agitated and got a slave protection agency and just kind of regulated slavery and made it nicer. They demanded that it be changed. And it was a long struggle. But the main point is, you know, that I'd like to leave people with is, you know, don't modify your own vision because you think the rest of the country is too conservative. You know, stand up for what you think and say it in the most militant fashion, just the way the abolitionists did, because you might find there's a lot of other actually militant people out there. And you know, like I started this whole interview talking about the poll that shows 90% of the country thinks corporations have too much power. You might find there's a lot more, you know, support than you realize. And I really wish that, that there was a political movement that asked for a lot instead of asking for a little. I think that would be a very popular movement.
Well, I think that's a good segue to a pledge pitch, actually. So we're going to ask for a lot. That's right. So Ted Mays, author of Gangs of America, want to thank you for joining us. I'm sure we'll have you on again soon. Do you have any new projects that you're working on now? Or?
Well, I'll talk about that in our next interview, but I really appreciate the time, and good luck with your pledge drive.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care.
I've been talking with Ted Nace, who wrote a book a couple years ago called Gangs of America, The Rise of Corporate Power and the Disabling of Democracy. The paperback has just been released, and it has an updated new chapter called So What's the Alternative?, which provides a lot of alternatives, one of them being KABU. And we are an alternative here from a major break from the kind of corporate media monopoly that has taken over so much of our airwaves and is also working on trying to take over much of the Internet. And you can become part of this alternative to corporate dominance by calling 503-232-8818. And if Ani and Bill are ready, let's go talk with them and see if they've got some more ideas. Also, I'd just like to know how we're doing out there.
Well, as usual, Ani is missing and presumed alive. But she has been doing a lot of work, and I have a lot of names to thank. So let's start with that. Vanessa, Peter, Michael, David, Tom, not Tom's of Maine, Patricia, David, and Anna or Anna are all contributing members now. Some are new, some are renewals. They come from places as varied as Portland, like Oswego, Stevenson, Washington, and Portland and Portland and Portland and Portland. So, and they did it by calling 503-232-8818 and 1-877-500-5266. They have brought our total up to $681, Barbara. So we're making some progress there. We have the better part of half an hour to reach the magic number for the show of $1,200, and the phones are ringing. This is very encouraging because you're, what is the word I'm looking for?
That's fine. Just let me know. I can pull them
up. You just get people. They can't resist you. You're irresistible, Barbara. When you're on the air, people call in. So I want you to continue to call in. And there she is, irresistible Barbara herself, in the proverbial flesh. 503-232-8818. That's the number in the 503 area code. And in the 877 area code, or in other words, free, 1-877-500-5266. And remember, we are at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. So if you want to drop by and see what KABU is in person and give us a pledge, as little as $20 will get you a KABU ceramic coffee mug designed by Kathy Wirtz, one of our wonderful volunteers. And you can be part of the story. I'm going to give you something that's up here that helps us tell a pledge, tell us what to say to you. It's the outline of an effective pitch break. So introduce yourself. So that's me. So I'm Bill, and I've introduced myself, and ask for money. God knows I've done that. Give the phone number. I'm doing that all the time. For instance, 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266. Give the goals, give the progress, et cetera, et cetera. And I've done all of that.
And so I think you need a little break from talking, don't you, Bill, there? So I got my coffee, so I'm ready to
oh, good.
You did a good job of kind of, you know, holding there while I'm running around.
And I
saw how busy Annie was, too. She's pretty busy.
Yeah, she's very busy because we're making all that money because they're calling in for you.
And I heard those phones. It's like a tinkle. It is very, very subtle. I kind of miss the days of, you know, like hearing the loud phone ringing as to heighten the excitement. I guess this is the soft sell mode that we're in.
Yeah, well, we don't want to get too excited because, you know, I have a weak heart.
Yeah, we're all getting older here. But, I mean, I'm thinking a lot about the conversation I just had with Ted Nace. I will say that one of the things I am most appreciative of KABU, of course, I have a slightly different approach to KABU than you listeners who don't come here all the time, because I've been on the air here for longer than I can remember. And KABU has just given me the opportunity to talk with and meet incredible people like Ted Nace, who I've talked with a couple times. I interviewed him right after this book came out in 2003, and then I guess the next night he was speaking at Annie Bloom's Books, and so I went and heard him speak, and I introduced myself, and we had a really nice conversation, and he's a really great guy. And so when Kathleen said he's got a revised version of the book out, and you want to have him on again, you know, what a great opportunity to get to chat with this guy again. But he's one of these real resources, and KABU provides these people all the time. And one of the things that's very exciting to me as a programmer at KABU, if I want to talk to somebody that I hear speak or I read their book, we figure out how to get a hold of them. And because we are the media, we have access to these people. And so you get to talk to all kinds of people that you wouldn't ordinarily get to talk to, because you can't just call somebody up like Michael Pollan, who's one of my favorite writers, and he's coming to town next month. And so, you know, we're going to have him on the air because he likes to be on KABU. He's on KABU every time he's in town. And that's another, you know, exciting opportunity. You read a book that you really like Botany of Desire, and then, oh, now I can talk to the author. But the thing we are, you know, as programmers, really excited about, like, talking to these people, having conversations with them. But we also happen to be sharing it with you by putting these conversations on the air. I don't just call Ted Nace up on my phone at home and talk with him. I talk to him in front of all of you, or so to speak, in over the airwaves. So you get to sort of talk with him, too, and especially through our call-in format. You do talk directly to someone like Ted Nace. And so we are bringing all these people who have great ideas and who have, you know, wonderful sense of spirit and wonderful personalities, bringing them all in the air, sharing them with you. And then also every week between 7:30 and 9, you all get on the air and talk to each other. And, you know, we kind of share our community. And that's what we're all about, is community radio. So that's what makes KABU so important. And that's why I'm so charged about KABU, that I not only give a lot of money to KABU every year, but I also come here once a week and do this show and have, you know, things I want to share. And so now it's your time to share. And you can share by calling 503-232-8818. Or if you're out of town and it's a toll call to call Portland, you can call toll-free at 1-877-500-5266, which is 500-KABU. And make a pledge for $40 or $60 or $120 or whatever you feel you can.
And remember, Barbara?
Yes.
A $60 pledge gets you Ted's book.
That's right. And it's a really great book. I have two copies of it now. I was thinking about, like, auctioning off the first edition that I got 2 years ago for, you know, a pledge of $600. I'll give you my first copy of Ted Nace's Gangs of America. But give a call. I mean, this is like a really important part of this is the hardest time of the year for us. I mean, it's not like we really love to spend all of our programming time asking you for money, and it's not like when we're not on the air that we like to listen to it ourselves, but it's really an important part, and we're trying to make our pledge drives as entertaining as possible, and it is an opportunity to bring special guests like Ted Nace on, and then it's an opportunity for you to do your part, become part of this community radio. And if you are, you know, if you have never, I mean, if you're like, I used to be one of these people, you know, I wasn't a member of the community station where I was living. Actually, I did. The first time I moved to New York, the first thing I did actually was join WBAI within a week of moving to New York. So I was one of those people. But then I came to Portland, you know, and I didn't have any money, and I couldn't afford to give KABU any money, and I just listened for free. And then I started volunteering at KABU, and then one day I realized I had enough money to give KABU at least $20 a year or $40 a year. And every, you know, year I start giving KABU more money because I start realizing how important KABU is to me. And now it's kind of, it's on the top list of the places that I give money to. And it's something for you to think about. If you listen to us all the time, and we are your lifeline for information and for culture, and it's not just the news and information programming that we have here, this incredible music. That's another thing I tune into KABU for, is all kinds of music. And I learn a lot about music I wouldn't know about, because there's all these people who are passionate about what they love, and they just bring it to KABU and they play it or they talk about it or whatever. And that's what this is. This is a station of people who are programming for passion and not for money, because there is no money here. We don't make it. We have no profit here, you know, being behind the mics here at KABU. But it's a really great opportunity for us to express ourselves and for you to learn and to share, and many opportunities here for you to express yourself as well. So what should they do, Bill?
They should call 503-232-8818, or from out of town, 1-877-500-5266. Or if you're listening on the web at kbo.fm, don't forget you can just go to the place that says join or become a member or one of those things. I'm sure you can find it, and you can become a member.
And I don't think you have to go through PayPal. I think it's a direct pay, isn't it? I hope so.
I can check it out so the next time. I do want to do one thing that I haven't done yet, and I want to get it done. And that's thank Delfina's Bakery at 4210 Northeast Going, who have provided breakfast treats. They are part of our community because they just give us that food. We don't pay for it.
And they do it every pledge drive, I think, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
For years, and they were giving us money when they were over in Northwest, I mean, giving us food when they were over in Northwest Portland.
Yeah. And they have very good food, I think. But that's just one man's opinion. But let's get your opinion of how wonderful community radio is. Remember, you call us at 503-232-8818. You pledge as much as you can, as little as is necessary. You know, whatever works for you, it is all going to a great place, which is us, KBOO-FM.
But it's not going to Bill directly.
No,
you know?
It isn't. I mean, and I can't tell you how annoyed I get by that.
Right. I mean, in fact, I went out to check a little while ago to make sure he wasn't pocketing all the money you're calling in. And he wasn't. It was all laying out on the table, and he was just like, had his hands off. But it's, and in fact, I mean, it's, when you come down here, I mean, and this is another issue we shouldn't air on the air. But, I mean, when you come down here, this place, as much as, on the one hand, you go, wow, there's all these microphones and there's all this equipment. It's pretty amazing. And there's all these computers. But the reality of it is we are pretty bare bones. And I spent the week at KQED in San Francisco at a workshop. And, boy, that's a station that's well endowed and well equipped. And they're in the hole as well. But, you know, so when you go to KABU, you realize that we are still pretty funky compared to, like, big public radio stations.
Even ours here, you know, OPB, if you listen to the numbers that they're talking about, the
and money they bring in like $2 million each pledge drive or something.
Yeah, I mean, this is a whole nother level of stuff.
And one, it's two reasons why KABU is cheap. I mean, one reason is that we don't have a very large paid staff. I mean, OPB, I'm not sure, they have 30, 40 paid people, I think, 50, 100. KQED has 5 or 6 million paid people. I mean, they've got very big operations, lots of paid staff. KABU is primarily run by volunteers. We have a core of 10 staff people who kind of take care of us and make sure everything is kind of happening. But the programmers are almost all volunteer programmers. And I mean, and that's a lot where this passion comes from, because people are doing these programmings not because we're getting paid, but because we really have something to say, or really think we have something to say, or something we really want to share. And I think it's that whole desire to share, which is what community radio is based upon. In fact, I have a friend who is involved with community radio in Berkeley, and we hadn't seen each other for a couple of years. I went down to visit him. This is back in the 70s, and we discovered we'd both gotten into radio together, you know, or separately, and we're both working at our community stations. And he said, well, you know how it used to be, we just, like, get a new record, we had to play it for everybody? So now we just do it for the community. We just put it on the radio. And I think that's kind of that passion. If you're one of those people who, like, wants to share your new record with all of your friends, and, you know, magnify that by a million, that's what it's like to be doing radio programming here at KABU.
And speaking of friends, we have some more friends. We have new friends, Marguerite and Cherie. One from Kaiser, Oregon, one from Vancouver, Washington. And we have old friends, Mark, Janet, and Catherine, all in Portland, who, and we only need another $133 to reach our goal of $1,200. That means one person contributing $10 a month and another person contributing
$13.
It's so little.
That's right. And I don't, you know if all the copies of Gangs of America have been taken?
I don't think so. Let me check.
I think we had at least 10 copies of the book.
Any more
copies?
Yes, there's still three. Still three copies.
Three more copies. And
so you better hurry.
That's $180 right there. And $60 a pledge, and you can get a copy of Gangs of America
and
by Ted.
And that'll get us over the top.
And that's great. And then I can take some phone calls, because I think that's going to be my immediate goal, is let's reach the goal of $1,200, and then we can take some listener callers. Because one of the things I was really hoping to talk about today was the Peace March on Sunday and how amazing that was. So we could have a little time for chatting at the end with you, the listener, if you call right now at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266 and pledge to become a member of KABU.
Do you know what I heard, Barbara?
What was that?
That the demonstration in Portland was like the second largest in the world.
Well, you know, I wonder about
that. Isn't that weird?
It is weird. I mean, I remember in the first Persian Gulf War when Portland was having these really big demonstrations, which were actually smaller than the one we had on Sunday, but they were big at the time. And we were being told that this was the biggest demonstration in the world. And then you find out, well, they had big demonstrations in Chicago and L.A., but they didn't get reported here, and they didn't know about our demonstrations. And so that's why I'm a little skeptical.
Well, I actually did the proverbial web search.
Did you actually did you second and third source this information?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and it's true?
And, well, you know, that's why I said apparently, because you never know for sure. But London had about 15,000 people, according to what I saw. We had about 10,000.
I think we had more than that.
New York had 1,000.
I think we had more than 10,000. I've been in 10,000 people marches in Portland.
Yeah, I went to the rally. I didn't go to the march. And when I was at the waterfront, I didn't think there were 10,000 people there at that point.
There
but
weren't.
I think it got bigger.
Yeah, well, I was there. There were about 2,000 or 3,000 when I arrived. When, by the time we left to march, I'd say it was closer to 20,000. That's my unofficial estimate. I am not a crowd estimator officially. I just play one on the radio. But anyway, but let's get back. We need some more money here.
Yeah,
so.
And I think we have only one more copy of the Gangs of America left. So that's encouraging. That's $120. We also have the very silly person in the studio, Ed Goldberg, and that's always encouraging.
And how much are we offering him for? I mean, if you make a pledge of about $1,000.
Actually, you give us money, we'll give you 10.
You can have it. Okay. So if you give
we'll give you money to take them off our hands.
Oh, okay. Well, no, I think we could offer Ed for, you know, it's between you and us. Call,
yeah.
Make us an offer we can't refuse. You get Ed Goldberg. And you'll have, you know, just be opinionated about whatever movies, you know, he'll be telling you what movies to go to for the rest of your life.
And he could talk to you about jazz, too. He is not uninformed about that.
That's true.
Yeah.
And then he'll read you scary murder mysteries about community radio stations.
Yeah.
To, you know.
So this is a great opportunity, 503-232-8818, out of town, 1-877-500-5266. Do we want to take some calls? I think we're pretty close here. We have more people on the phones right now.
Okay.
So
we've got about 5 minutes for Colin. So, Aaron, this is very exciting. We're in that pledge drive mania now where nobody knows what they're doing. So let Aaron know that we're going to go back to the studio and we're going to take some calls now. So if you want to join the conversation for the last 5 minutes of the show, you can give a call at 503-231-8187. I know there's no callers right now, but maybe somebody wants to call. If you have been a good person and you've made your pitch, you've called 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
I'd like to be a caller.
Okay,
we
got our caller. Okay.
Okay, and that's me.
Hello, you're on the air.
Thank you. That's Barbara, right?
That's right. This
yeah.
is Bill, right?
Yes,
okay.
Yes. And I just wanted to give people, you know, we talked earlier about Southern Pacific versus Santa Clara or Santa Clara versus Southern Pacific Railroad. I wanted to give people a web address if they're interested in finding out more about that. It's Radical, R-A-T as in Thomas, ICAL.org. /corporations/ capital S capital C lowercase v, and these are necessary, capital S, capital P, capital R, 1886, as in 1886, which is when the case was, dot HTML. And it explains exactly how it came to be that that case became the beginning of corporate citizenship. And it's pretty scary. But it's very interesting, and it's good information because when, you know, you start talking about not having the kind of corporate power that we've got now, you have a very good case that is right here. It talks about the legal contradiction between a corporation being owned and consequently sort of like slavery and yet at the same time allegedly a citizenship. So at one point it's supposedly covered by the 14th Amendment and at the same time it should be covered as a slave by the 13th Amendment.
Right.
So that's, I just wanted to add, throw that into the mix.
And also let you know that in the first chapter of Gangs of America, there's a very good, he does several chapters where he covers that case and then he shows the whole legal contortion by which corporations have gained the rights and privileges that they have today. So I highly do recommend this book, The Gangs of America, The Rise of Corporate Power and the Disabling of Democracy by Ted Nace. I think we only have one copy left that we're offering as a premium.
Last time I heard.
But I'm sure...
we're out.
We're out. Okay. Well, go to Pals.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a really good book. I'm sure you can get it at the library as well. And I think it's a very good read. Because a lot of the stuff that I've read about the whole concept of corporate personhood, I feel like it's a little bit kind of knee-jerk, not that well-researched sometimes, a little bit hysterical. This book is really well-researched and documented, except he starts out talking about, I was going to mention this to him today, he starts out talking about how the oil companies colluded or in the 40s and 50s to buy up all the streetcar lines around the country and tear up the tracks and replace them with buses. It was actually a collusion of the oil companies and the rubber companies, the tire companies. And I've read several things that kind of make it seem like that was not exactly why streetcars went by the wayside in most cities in the United States, that it had also to do with the love affair with the automobile. So it's the only pleasure I've kind of questioned some of the documentation in this book, but most of it seems to me to be really solid, and it's a very good read. And beyond that, it's really fascinating. It's like, what do they call those books, page turners? You know, you just keep... I remember when I was reading it, I was like staying up all night reading it and just like really taken in by it. And I had to read it to interview him the next day, but I enjoyed myself.
Not to contradict, and I'm not contradicting, but when I was living downtown, I was living on 11th and Clay, right near Portland State, while they were building the trolley at just, you know, not too many years ago. And in the course of excavating to lay in the tracks for the trolley, they dug up the tracks of the trolley.
Oh, I know.
Bizarre.
He says in the book that they tore up all the tracks, and the reality in Portland is that they just paved over them.
Right.
The same thing on Milwaukee. But they were repaving Milwaukee a couple years ago, and they dug up the street, and there's the trolley tracks from the old Milwaukee Electric train line. Right. So, I mean, it's definitely true that the trolleys all went by the wayside in the 40s and 50s, but
right.
I think we got to be a little careful when we get a little too conspiratorial. But in fact, I think that most of what Ted talks about in this book is not conspiracy theory. It's like, it's very
fact.
Well documented. It's fact. I mean, it's all these Supreme Court decisions, and it's his interpretation of it is very insightful. And some of it is original thinking, and some of it is just based on some really good research. But he starts out in the book by saying that he wanted to know more about corporations, and so he went to look for a kind of a comprehensive book about the history of corporations, discovered there wasn't one, and being a kind of do-it-yourself guy, he wrote the book himself. So, and that's why I'm kind of curious what he's going to do next, because he is somebody who just like really knows how to research. And you know what? I'm just about out of time here. So, any last words, Bill, before?
Well, okay, we are out of the books, which is, you know, both bad and good. Good because so many people called in. 10 people called in and pledged at least $60, and they called at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Of course, sad because there are no more. We may well have reached our goal, but I don't have the numbers yet. There are more people to thank, but I don't have the name, so thank you, and thank you. We will be going to a new show. We will have new people sitting here behind the mics in the proverbial Pledge Central.
And in fact, I'm going to tell you who they are right now.
Oh, goody.
So we'll do that. And I want to thank Bill and Ani, who didn't actually say much, but I saw her running around being four people at once back there. So we will maybe at the very end of the show, maybe we can check in and find out exactly how much we raised. But thank you all for thanks. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, pledgers. Thank everybody who has helped make this a very successful moment in our pledge drive. I want to let you know that coming up at 9 o'clock, it's Movie Talk with Ed, DK, and Don on the latest films. At 9:30 on Speaking of Animals, host Laurie Sonnenfeld speaks with Ken Foster, author of The Dogs Who Found Me, What I've Learned from Pets Who Were Left Behind, about the redemptive power of rescuing and caring for dogs.
Oh, and Barbara?
Yes?
Let me make a personal thank yous to Teresa, is a renewal, Michael, new, Judy, renewal, Judy, new, Diane, renew. Diane's from Gresham, everyone else is from Portland. Thank you, thank you, and thank you.
Okay. And then we will continue at 10 o'clock on People Rise Up. Andrew Geller speaks with Maude Barlow, National Chairperson of the Council of Canadians, Canada's largest public advocacy organization, a best-selling author. Her latest book is Too Close for Comfort, Canada's Future Within Fortress, North America. And I do believe that Maude might be speaking tonight as part of the Oil and Water series. At 11 o'clock on Democracy Now, a look at the play My Name is Rachel Corrie, which is causing controversy after the New York City theater that was scheduled to run at postponed production. We'll hear why. We'll also have the reaction of Rachel Corrie's parents. And you've been listening to Locus Focus. I hope that my CD is still in there because we actually have time to play some music. So we're going to have a little musical break and then come back with Ed and the Movie Talk people. I want to thank you for listening. I will be gone next week. I'll be back in 2 weeks and hopefully have some more exciting Pledge Drive programming. And thank Erin Sexton-Sala, who's taken time out from her busy motherhood schedule to be my engineer.
You don't know what love is until you learn the meaning of the blues. Till you've lost a love you had to lose. You don't know what love is. You don't know how lips hurt until you've kissed and had to pay the cost. Until you've lived your you have lost. You don't know what love is. Do you know how a lost heart feels? The thought of reminiscing and her lips the taste of tears lose their taste for
talking about the KABU Youth Collective, the Underground, March 22nd from 6 to 7.
The theme is My First Blank.
And then on March 31st, we have the Youth Randomonium, the music show from 11 to midnight, where you bring in music and you play it. And preferably it's music by people under the age of 21, like youth music, by youth people, or it can just be whatever you want.
Okay, like, does the music have to be, like, current day? Like,
no.
Teens or whatever? Or does it, or could it also be teens in the past?
I'm pretty sure it can be teens in the past. And it's after 10 o'clock, so whatever language you want can be used.
Well, I guess that could come in handy, I guess, from it editing can. Wise.
Why, yes, it can.
It's 9 a.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up is Movie Talk with Ed, DK, and Don on the latest films. At 9:30 on Speaking of Animals, host Lori Sonnenfeld speaks with Ken Foster, author of The Dogs Who Found Me, What I've Learned from Pets Who Were Left Behind, and about the redemption power of rescuing and caring for dogs. At 10 on People Rise Up, Andrew Geller speaks with Maude Barlow, National Chairperson of the Council of Canadians, Canada's largest public advocacy organization, a best-selling author. Her latest book is Too Close for Comfort, Canada's Future Within Fortress North America. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, a look at the play My Name is Rachel Corrie, which is causing controversy after the New York City Theater that was scheduled to run it postponed production. We'll hear why, and we'll also hear the reaction of Rachel Corrie's parents.